Furthermore, when Bitcoiners develop privacy and scaling technology for Bitcoin, we make it substantially more challenging for anti-coiners to make the case that a war on Bitcoin is winnable. When more of us demonstrate the unmatched power of Lightning Network payments in small nations, influential legislators and bankers in the U.S. take note and are far less likely to support an adversarial strategy towards Bitcoin. When another Bitcoiner writes a book, makes a video tutorial, or promotes a decentralized, gamified stacking movement like StackChain, they push Bitcoin that much further ahead in this race of races. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this is Bitcoin Audible. Read 700. So what do we do for Read 700? It needs to be a good rant. It needs to be something that gets me real jazzed. So I was digging through a bunch of the things that I saved where I specifically marked them as, okay, you're going to read this at some point, come back to it. And one that I think will actually be relevant to Nick Carter's piece that we will read later, but is just really, really good. So it helps us set the stage for some things in the future and also I think is really important. It's just the mission. Like, what is the mission? What are we doing? And how do we win? How do we be the winners in this? How do we avoid the war? And that is what Corey Clipston, the CEO of Swan Bitcoin, has written on their blog. And it is a great piece. In fact, there's a couple of really good ones recently that I actually had to turn down for this one. But I think this one's really short, really sweet. But it's just good. It's just good. It's like I said, it's by Corey Clipston, and it's titled The Race to Avoid the War. So real quick, I want to thank our sponsors before we jump in. And they are the Fold Card, the best way, the lowest barrier way to start stacking Bitcoin without having, by actually getting a discount, by using a debit card that gets you sats back on everything in your fiat life. It is the constant trickling savings account if you use it right. I have saved up 0.185 Bitcoin. That's 18,500,000 sats just from using the Fold Card. You've got to check them out and you get 20,000 sats free just to start out with the free debit card. And you can upgrade anytime you want. Go to guyswan.com/fold. And then when you're ready for your serious savings account, for your automatic savings plan that goes automatically to your cold card, to your keys and your hardware and signing device, you want Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin is the ultimate onboarding service, and they are actually the writers of the blog that we are reading from today, and they have so many services. They have so many community projects. The Bitcoiner Jobs, you're looking for a job in Bitcoin, bitcoinerjobs.com, Swan Bitcoin is doing that for you. You want to learn how to hold your keys? Swan Bitcoin. You want to understand the macro environment and get some of the best analysis in the space? Swan Bitcoin. You want an easy way to get into Bitcoin, low cost, stack automatically, send it to your keys, set it and forget it? Swan Bitcoin. Use my link in the show notes and you'll also be helping out this show. And then lastly, the Cold Card hardware wallet and CoinKite, the makers of so many hardware, Bitcoin hardware and security devices and just cool devices. I mean, if you don't have a block clock, you gotta think about getting a block clock. And the Cold Card Q1, their new device, looks like a retro BlackBerry. It's so cool, and it has basically all of the hardware wallet functionality, like all the different ways that you can scan NFC, USB drive, big QR screen, air-gapped with a micro SD, all of it. And it is just now for pre-order. I am super stoked about this. You have got to check it out. Link will be in the show notes. And I'm sorry, there is a early bird pricing. I said in the last episode that you can get 9% with my code, but it's already at the maximum discount. So the code does not work on it right now. It will work when it actually releases, but you're probably going to get a better price. So if you want to pre-order, get it now. Link will be in the show notes. And with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, The Race to Avoid the War. Let us proceed, together, united yet decentralized, and win this race for one and all, so that we may never have to fight the war. By Corey Clipston. We Bitcoiners are in a race, perhaps the most important race we will ever run. We are racing against time to drive the adoption of Bitcoin as fast as we can. We are racing toward a future in which the US government never coordinates a concerted attack against Bitcoin and Bitcoiners. This is a race to avoid a war. Let's be clear. Bitcoin is going to win no matter what. Bitcoin is the best money we've ever had. Its properties were purpose-built to enable it to function as a primary store of value, medium of exchange, and unit of account for every human and machine on planet Earth. It is designed to withstand and survive all attacks, and in fact, it gets stronger when challenged. Bitcoin is replacing money that is already in the process of collapse, money that would collapse independently of Bitcoin's existence. Bitcoin is engineered to be the orderly, anti-fragile alternative to a chaotic collapse. How far into the future does Bitcoin's victory reside as money for all of the world? It could be as soon as the 2030s, but only if we sprint hard. And what if we lose this race? Although Bitcoin is destined to win, if we lose the race to avoid the war, victory will be far more costly. This would be the long way and the hard way. Instead of a sprint to a bright orange future, we would be embroiled in a long, hard confrontation with a government desperate to hold on to the power of the monetary printing press. If we lose the race, the long, hard path will be a war in which hundreds of millions of people will suffer the decivilizing and impoverishing effects of hyperinflation. So, for those of us alive, for those of us ready and able now, it is vitally important to run this race as well as possible. How do we do this? There are many ways. First, we drive adoption forward. Nearly 3 years ago, we launched Swan with the mission to recruit 10 million Bitcoiners, the intransigent minority, people who store a meaningful amount of their net worth in the Bitcoin protocol and who understand it well enough to want to fight for it. We are fully committed to both of these goals, enabling Bitcoin acquisition and building Bitcoin comprehension. Together, these are what build the intransigent minority. Furthermore, when Bitcoiners develop privacy and scaling technology for Bitcoin, we make it substantially more challenging for anti-coiners to make the case that a war on Bitcoin is winnable. When more of us demonstrate the unmatched power of Lightning Network payments in small nations, influential legislators and bankers in the US take note and are far less likely to support an adversarial strategy towards Bitcoin. When another Bitcoiner writes a book, makes a video tutorial, or prompts a decentralized, gamified stacking movement like StackChain, they push Bitcoin that much further ahead in this race of races. When Bitcoiners excel in their fiat jobs, consistently pushing more and more of their weekly paychecks into their Bitcoin savings accounts, they push the number go up technology to new heights, pulling in more grassroots adoption. All of these activities move us toward the inevitable success of Bitcoin on this rational, collaborative, and peaceful, yet revolutionary path. However, when people lie about Bitcoiners and Bitcoiners in order to line their pockets with altcoin pump and dump gains, like the crypto VC firm Andreessen Horowitz, or attempt orange washing affinity marketing projects like STX, they make a war on Bitcoin that much more likely. When they fund misinformation campaigns with millions of ill-gotten dollars, they increase the likelihood of a fight that can and should be avoided for the sake of all human civilization. When others bury their heads in the sand and pretend that gold can still do what it has been proven to be unable to do in a modern global digital economy, they hold back others who understand the benefits of sound money, but haven't yet learned to distinguish gold from Bitcoin, a sound money that works exceptionally well in our physical and digital global reality. Bitcoiners must stand up and call out those who actively slow Bitcoin's adoption because they risk knocking us off our path towards the peaceful adoption of a sound global monetary standard, which the world needs as soon as possible. All these activities are parts of our historic collaborative effort to guide civilization onto the best of all possible paths. We write code, we educate, we help others, we donate, we stack, and we build, all to win the race against the war. As Michael Saylor declared so eloquently, "You don't want to be a martyr, you want to be a winner." So let us proceed, together, united yet decentralized, and win this race for one and all, so that we may never have to fight the war. That wraps up our piece from the Swan Bitcoin blog by Corey Clipston, "The Race to Avoid the War." I have 18,500,000 sats that I have in a savings balance in my fold that is purely from switching debit cards. Right now, that is $4,000 worth of Bitcoin that did not cost me $4,000 to get. The premium card, there's a free debit card version that doesn't have quite the rewards, but it's free. But the premium debit card version is just $10 a month. And I've been using it for a couple of years. I mean, it's since it landed. And I have 0.185 Bitcoin. I pay my groceries with this thing. I pay my bills. I pay my internet. I pay my electricity. I pay for my miners that are heating my house and paying me sats for it. I'm about to order some additional fans and things off of Amazon, and I get an Amazon gift card through Fold with 5% back for being a premium member. 5% right now, plus tons of other merchants. And I get a daily spin. Every day I spin and get a couple of sats. I mean, just Fold is the stack sats on everything so many times in so many different ways app. Check it out. Sats back is just, and the Fold card is just like one of those great pieces of your stack of Bitcoin things in your life. And you get 20,000 sats just for signing up for the free card, not even the premium. 20,000 sats just by using my link. Go to guyswan.com/fold. If you don't know how to spell that, or you're confused how many N's there are in the name Swan, well, luckily, I've got it right there for you in the show notes. Now let's jump back in. I think Corey is right in this perspective. I think this is a good way to see it, is that if we reach a critical mass before the war truly starts to unfold, and I think I don't think that's a silly word to use. I think that's exactly what, I mean, historically, that is the consequence of a failure of a monetary system. Like, a fiat failure almost universally comes with war. And war is exactly when all the ethics and the rights and the state of emergency is the exception to all of the rules. Every right that you think you have, it will be trampled on, it will be shut down, and you will be locked in a box for them to get what they want out of the situation. And to deny that is to deny both human nature and an obvious long history teaching us that this is exactly how it happens. As the counterfeit class loses their influence and their power, and when the governments of the world begin, when Western governments in particular begin to lose their ability to do anything with the printing press, think the entire corrupt class operates on this. This is their income. This is how they get influence. This is why they can push funding for every stupid program that has no economic return whatsoever, because they have a machine that allows them to siphon resources without the obvious cost on the person being siphoned from. They're pulling a little bit of gas out of all of our tanks to fuel their private jets. And that's on top of the explicit taxation. That's on top of the taxing the income and then taxing the consumption of that income. They managed to have and spend more money than any institution on the planet and still demand that much more. And they have driven the dollar, they have driven Western fiat currencies to the edge of a cliff that they have built up, have made massive, and we will pay the price if we do not exit, if we do not get around it, and if we can move fast enough, we can avoid being hit by the train head on. We can just get out of the way and let them ride off by themselves. But we have to protect our infrastructure. We have to protect our friends and family. We have to protect our communication systems. We have to get out. We have to build and use the alternatives. That's why I talk about Nostr and Keet and Bitcoin and Lightning. Like, these things are critical. Like, it, we have to have avenues that they do not control. If we want to avoid a digital ID system, we have to be able to connect without it. And I think we're going, to get that. I think it should be obvious that they are pushing toward that. The only way that we can avoid it is if we adopt the things that make them obsolete before they get started. And we need to keep going. We need to go from the top down. We need to go all the way back to the base infrastructure. We need to rethink how we establish a connection to the internet itself. LSPs are a huge centralized point of failure in all of our lives without us quite realizing just how much of a problem that is. But what I love is that Bitcoiners are thinking about this, that this is the perspective to take. You have to technologically, you have to build the barriers up that can stop the flow of the damage. We need to put gaps in the dominoes. We need to have savings buffers between us and our local community and our families and our Bitcoiners and our citadels, our groups. We need to have buffers between us and the rest of the world. And we need to spread that to as many people as possible. You know, I really think the developing world is going to be so crucial in this movement, because I think what we're seeing now and what we will continue to see is the U.S. and the Western governments getting increasingly hostile as the lack of surveillance and the lack of control and the lack of direct insight that they have over people becomes threatened in this one corner of things, while their control and their surveillance is aggressively increasing in another. They're going to desperately want to push in that other direction as fast as possible, which is why we need these things like Nostr, like Bitcoin, like public-private key pairs, and we need to understand how to use them, which is why I'm going back to the basics episodes. I think it's so critical that we just have a standard way to view and think about these things, because we can only educate ourselves to a solution. That's the only thing. If we don't have the knowledge, we have to unschool everything that the fiat world has taught us, because they taught us bad principles, they taught us bad ethics, they taught us bad logic. They didn't teach us logic at all. They taught us that working day in and day out to memorize what they say and what they claim the truth is science. That if you memorize enough in a big enough chunk of time with an institution that has a credential that's important enough, that somehow that is science, that somehow that is critical thinking. And I think that's a lot of the reason why when you first get into Austrian economics and you first kind of open the door to the rabbit hole with a lot of the things around how Bitcoin works. Like, one of the things is game theory. Game theory is so fascinating because it gives you an entirely new perspective. Like everything you thought you knew about how society works is flipped on its head. You see the social sphere as a consequence. Whereas the common narrative is that it drives the things forward. But really, it's circular. It feeds back on itself. And it's like that in the economy, too, is that prices influence the relationships and the movement of funds and the division and distribution of resources across the economic system. And as soon as that price induces a change at any one place in the system, it shifts another price. It shifts another relative distribution, and it essentially reflexively influences the price again. So the very movement of the system in reaction to the output of the system is its input. So it's constantly moving forward. It's constantly changing because nothing can be static, because everything is reacting. Every time something tries to react to find stability, its movement creates an instability somewhere else. Like, that is the uncertainty of economic exchange to begin with. That's why the price gives us so much useful information about the economy if we are making legitimate decisions. If it is based on sound money actually weighing the value of cars against bananas against sandwiches with the exact same totem to weigh them against. When you're in this messy fiat world where resources are being stolen out from underneath us and we're not even aware of it. There's no skin in the game decision making on whether or not those resources are even spent slightly productively. And it just goes to fuel a counterfeit class that lives off the backs of everyone else and has these pet projects for what they want to accomplish in the world, even though they're doing nothing productive for anyone. Suddenly, trillions and trillions of dollars worth of resources are being siphoned from the people who care, from the people who actually had skin in the game and worked their asses off to achieve and earn that income, and who would spend it on their families, who would put their life together and try to find some sort of stability for themselves, is being ripped out from underneath them and used to push the most absurd size and just astronomical waste toward the most vapid, cheap, unbacked view of the world possible, where everything is just all bias, no nuance, no thought. Who cares what the costs are because I'm not paying them? That is what has started directing the world, and fiat is its ultimate fuel. It is the food that drives everything about the cancer, and we should expect it to defend itself. It is a system. The people inside of it have the incentives to keep it running unless we pull as many people out of it as possible. And that is a huge undertaking. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. It's hard to teach a boomer that everything they think they know about economics and basic functioning of money, which they didn't know anything about it. It's never even something that has entered most people's minds. It's hard to break down their worldview and build back up something that gives them a clearer image of the world. Most people reject it. It's really, really hard to deal with. And also, I think this is largely a consequence of schooling too. It reinforces the idea that you're terrible or you're stupid or you're bad if you ever got anything wrong, if you ever did something bad, that during you should be embarrassed about the state of things while you are practicing them. And I think it's led to this thing where we're so afraid of feeling, of appearing as if we don't know something, that we're supposed to just pretend that we know everything and we've got it all figured out, because we're going to get a bad grade if we have any questions. Now, obviously, there's always an element of just lack of insecurity, you know, like you just as a person, you know, that's built into us. But I think our systems have actually reinforced it. That's how they ended up judging things. And that's something that I think generally these periods of history that are referred to as, you know, like the Enlightenment, like this waking up of viewing the world in an entirely different way, of breaking the Overton window and then reshaping all of how we think about all of the pieces of society and all the things that we do and know and that make our individual lives work all the time, forces us to rethink. 100%, I think that's a perfect large picture image of what is happening right now. But that comes with massive conflict. Always, always, both internally on the individual level, internally within families, within neighborhoods and communities and, you know, groups. It just, change always creates conflict. And when there is so much at stake, so much on the line for people who already treat us like their slaves, that everything is just about whether or not the government gets to accomplish, the government and political and counterfeit class, do they get to push their vision onto the world or not? And if anything stands in the way of that, then it's the enemy. Then it should be destroyed, it should be demeaned, it should be ridiculed, because skeptical thought against the authority's declaration is not allowed. We are in a race, and we should treat it that way. Every single day, we need to do something. We can outpace them. We have something that they don't. A reason. Something meaningful. Something to actually care about rather than be afraid of. I'll tell you, when I look at the people in Bitcoin, the people that I know, the people who have dedicated themselves to this, and the people who want to dedicate themselves to this. And remember that one of the best things that you can do if you're still stuck in fiat life and a fiat job is to work that job as hard as possible and put everything that you possibly can back into Bitcoin, back into the Bitcoin ecosystem. Take the time to learn and tinker with the tools that give you an exit out and start small. Be okay with keeping it as simple as downloading a new app. As, you know, just trying to figure out how to spend $5 over Lightning for some silly little thing. Figure out how something can solve just one problem for you. And then share that with anybody else who has that problem. And if you're a builder, build. Build. This is the perfect time, and there are so many tools now. We are not, there are so much just sitting on the table that we have yet to take advantage of. In fact, I've got an article from Breeze that I really want to do on the show. I've already started recording it. It'll come sometime this week, maybe tomorrow, I'm not sure. But about the Lightning SDK and the ability to have Lightning, to easily integrate Lightning into any app, all the apps that people are already using, and using Breeze, using Greenlight, and basically this stack of things in their SDK, just basically as a back end that they simply plug into it. They don't need to understand how Lightning works. They've got a Lightning service provider. They've got automatic liquidity. Everything manages on the back end, and they can just plug people into the payment network. And I've been talking about for years that there's going to be a point where all of this stuff can be non-custodial, that all of this stuff can be non-KYC, and it's all going to be automated, that you're just going to be able to manage liquidity across the board. And you'll be able to open and close channels. You'll be able to splice and shift. And a lot of those tools still aren't even out there. Like the Breeze, I don't think a lot of services and things are using splicing, the Lightning service providers specifically. It seems to be, when I'm using a lot of these wallets and I go in and just like kind of look at channels and stuff, that they're opening new channels and sometimes closing old channels and opening new ones with new amounts to push funds forward. But mostly it just seems like my old channels are staying open as long as they have liquidity and I'm using the wallet. And new channels open automatically if I receive a payment that I can't actually receive, that I can't, that I don't have the liquidity for. But they work. I have four wallets that are basically with different LSPs. And if I get a payment, I just get a payment. When you have time, explore the tools. When you have time, talk to somebody about Bitcoin. And that goes back again to Austin Herbert, the article we read a couple days back on an orange pill for Bitcoiners. I highly recommend that one just because it's on this same idea, and why I go into it in the guy's take, why I really liked Austin's article, but also what I think we need to continue to orange pill people, like where I think our focus ought to be. And one is, I think we don't tell enough story. Maybe that's because it's the largest barrier, maybe because it's more likely to fail, so it's a higher risk when you can just be excited and just tell people about Bitcoin. But nonetheless, I think when story works, it does the best job. It teaches the most and has the most lasting effect. It combines our ability to identify with a person's struggle and feel the emotion and the conflict that they go through, and then learn a lesson in how they overcome it. And that's how you get anything to stick in somebody's mind, right? You get them to feel an emotion, to have an association with the thing, a way that they can identify their world and who they are and a struggle or a challenge that they have with what you are trying to explain to them, or with the thing that you want them to take a second look at. And that emotion is like a small window. It opens something up so that they can consider if it's a positive emotion and they want to follow it. It's how you get people to rethink things. And that's why I think story is so unbelievably effective. Aside from the obvious fact that it's how we relate to everything ever, always. Like, we just, everything that we do is told to us. Like, we relate to the entire world as a series of stories about how things, what job and process everything is going through and how it relates to us. You know, I don't think of a chair as a bunch of pieces of wood and nails and some particular grain or color. Like all of the characteristics and things that make it the chair, that's not what comes to mind when I see a chair. That's not my relationship to it. I have to purposefully go and start to think or care about all of those working parts and how it might even be put together. What a chair is to me is a place to sit down, and it's either comfortable or uncomfortable, and it either looks stupid or it looks pretty nice in this room. It's how I relate to it. That is what we do about everything in our life. It's a story for what it means to us. And especially when there are massive campaigns happening to basically set the social wind against Bitcoin. I mean, look at what the Cal Penn video and Bloomberg and God, it's so stupid. It's amazing. Like, we're fighting like the same dumb FUD from 2011 and 2012, the stuff we've been dealing with forever that you would just like dismiss back then. You're just like, God, this is so stupid. Like, these people don't have any idea what they're talking about. It's now like huge mainstream, like, commercials and like media. Like, it's the same dumb things that we've explained and have been proved obviously wrong for over a decade, but we are still fighting it. This is a really important reason why I think we need to pull people to unfiltered or locally filtered, so to speak, because everything's, you have to filter, otherwise you're just trying to drink the ocean of information. But why we need to build alternative communications rails, why I think that's one of the most important things right now, and to set up an alternative economy. And I think we've reached that point where this is the moment, I think. In fact, I think we've been here for a year. Where this is, and I think that's why Keat and Noster and these things, Zaps and streaming value for value, that a year to 2 years ago, just non-existent. Like, I think that's why they are here right now, is because there are a lot of people who have realized this and have been pushing as hard as they can in this way. We need to make, this is one of my favorite quotes about this, or from this article, is, quote, Furthermore, when Bitcoiners develop privacy and scaling technology for Bitcoin, we make it subsequently more challenging for anti-coiners to make the case that a war on Bitcoin is winnable. When more of us demonstrate the unmatched power of Lightning Network payments in small nations, influential legislators and bankers in the U.S. take note and are far less likely to support an adversarial strategy towards Bitcoin. And now, even though I think the semantic framing of Bitcoin as a weapon, the thing that Jason Lowry talks about all the time, and why some people love his take and a bunch of people just call him an affinity scammer and, you know, government space boy. But this is actually where I think I actually appreciate his perspective. Even though I think semantically it's kind of just, I guess it's just a definition. It's literally just a definition problem. Is it like something, if I've got a force field, he considers that a weapon. If I've got a shield, then I'm protecting myself. Like, defense is created by weapons. And while I kind of understand the argument that you don't want to semantically put Bitcoin in that category, there's an element to proving, you know, this is proof of work, really. There's an element to proving that you are indestructible. There is an assertion of your defensibility. Like, it is not a bad thing, and we should boast it, and we should talk about it, is how strong Bitcoin is. and how resilient Bitcoin is, because that makes it difficult to sell the cost of trying to fight something that looks like that fight would not be victorious. No one wants to lose a fight. Our job is to make it so that no one can win a fight against Bitcoin, and that it looks like no one can win a fight against Bitcoin. And he also brings up Lightning Network in small nations. I really think, you know, this is open source technology, and with the regulations and the systems in the Western world getting, I've started bringing this up earlier, but it didn't finish my thought, is that with Western nations getting more aggressive towards it, and like Nick Carter's recent piece on Chokepoint 2.0 hitting the crypto world, I think Bitcoin is going to fall into that category. They will be, Bitcoin and shitcoins and crypto will all be bundled into one package. And that's why I've always said I think it's critically important that we separate Bitcoin from the fiat 2.0 casino that is crypto. But as the regulations, as the noose starts to tighten, I really think we're going to see a lot of cross-continent services. So I think with the things that are being built in Africa, in South America, and in largely the lower, you know, the global South, I think what they are building for in their environments and in the challenges and controls that they typically have to deal with, which are usually far more restrictive and far more dependent on the choices of an external government power, a Western nation that basically dictates their monetary situation. And then the hyperinflation that we're seeing in so many countries, particularly smaller countries that are basically the dominoes falling up the ladder as the entire fiat system, the global fiat system is literally collapsing and breaking apart as we speak. And there's this crazy war between the quote-unquote allies and the BRICS nations, China, India, Russia, and they're getting off the dollar. The Fed system as a global way to move funds, as something that is actually accessible around the entire world, that is something that connects the world, is falling apart. Walls are being built, firewalls are being put in place, and power is being shifted around like crazy. The petrodollar system, as we've talked about numerous times on this show, the petrodollar system is dead. It is far beyond its peak, and it has started to crack. And like I have said on this show a couple of times, I think that when we look back on it in 10 years or so, it will probably be that it was essentially dead. I mean, it may be even earlier, I don't know. But I think it was pretty clearly dead in February, March, and April of 2020. And I think that everything that has happened since is the beginning of the fire that is going to engulf it. And right now, what the Fed is trying desperately to do is act like there's a way out of it. But it literally means sacrificing everything about Western economies, about everything that has Western economies have come to rely on, and the entire debt system as a whole. They have to reverse course, or they have to drive the Western world into complete collapse and pretend like they're doing a good job, which they would do. And I don't think they have any reservations. I don't think they care about anything except whether or not they get to keep power on the other side of this. That's why they call it the Great Reset. They fully know that the collapse is coming. It's why they've been selling it. It's because they know they're not going to fix it. It's too difficult and too complicated to fix it. So what they're going to do is they're going to let everyone else pay for it, and they're going to reset. And what they want to make sure is that they are the ones who hit the reset button, and that they are still in charge when we get the new system. We have to beat them to it. We have to build and adopt the new system first and in enough numbers so that when they hit the button, we don't have to care. We can watch it as spectators and desperately try to pull people out of the fire, out of the sinking Titanic, as it goes down. That's our job. And it is an ideological and social problem as much as it's a technological and economic problem. But ultimately, everything that will back up the social and the cultural and the ideological movement is the technology. is that it works. Because much like the price encourages someone to make a new behavior and it forces them to, or incentivizes them to shift resources, which alters a new price and becomes a new input back into the original price and changes the situation and the economic conditions that feed back on itself. The technology influences the social sphere. The technology influences the culture. Our ability to have an honest discussion on Nostr, to have private meetings where we can build things and we can know we're not being spied on and we're not being filtered and somebody isn't able to mute something in our direct conversations and it's not being shadow banned and locked away from everybody who specifically goes looking for that conversation and to talk with someone. We have to save the conversation. We have to save the ability to pull in new people. We have to save their sovereignty to be a part of the conversation, to get the tools, to have access, to be able to connect without somebody's permission. And that's why going back to Africa, I really think Africa and South America and the Global South, they're going to be building some of the bigger tools that I think we will be using in Western nations to protect our lives from our capital controls and our irresponsible, corrupt, parasitic governments and political institutions and counterfeit and the counterfeit class of the Western nations. The Global South is going to lead the way because that is their current situation. That is the conditions that they are born into. You know, you think you can inherit the shadow. I was born in the dark. We are going to have a lot to learn from people who adopt and build alternative systems in totalitarian regimes that I think we will likely need in the not too distant future. But here's the beauty of it, is that if we can start using it now, if we can make sure that we have our conversation secured, that we have the Bitcoin network secured, that it's lightweight and easy to spin up a new node, that we have the satellite networks, that we know we can get across any firewall, that we know our conversations are encrypted and private. Basically, if we can build the boat before the rain comes, if we can finish the shelter before the storm, we can avoid it altogether. You know, I think there's, I mean, maybe this is just the way I used to think about things, but I kind of feel like it's pretty mainstream to just kind of think that other people are making things happen, that to be a spectator in your own life. And maybe that's just human nature, you know, like, maybe there's no way around that. Essentially, there's always just going to be a small remnant or a portion of the economy that feels they have purpose and they drive things forward. But I don't know. I don't believe that. Like I think there's something very deeply human about the need for meaning and the need to be a part of something. And I refuse to believe that most people are just screwed to be followers. I don't know. And you know, even if it is true, it makes no sense to believe it because it's partially a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, if you believe it, you're just going to believe in the worst in other people. And therefore you won't even find the people who do, because you'll just assume they're part of the group that there is no hope for. Which is why I don't think it's not a useful belief. It has no purpose. I think everyone can be sovereign. I think everyone can take responsibility for their lives. I think everyone's smart enough to figure that shit out. I think we've been droned into submissiveness by a fiat culture and by a mainstream that teaches you that all the answers are done, there's no discovery left, and to do what you're told and to repeat what we say, and to just think of the people who move life and accomplish something meaningful as these distant celebrities and these bright lights and these exceptional people who do these crazy, they're so much smarter than you, they're so much more capable than you, there's no way, just watch them on the TV and eat your Cheetos and, you know, just slowly become nihilistic and believe that there was no reason to be here in the first place and just wish, just dream about the day that you can be them. It's like they're not smarter. They're not better. They just did it. They just did it. And it's so, it's things that are so small can make such a big difference, especially with the way technology moves right now. That somebody could, that JB and Fiat Jeff could just put this little, this piece of software together and start a real crazy movement for a completely decentralized Twitter alternative. That just a couple of good ideas that people who in their garages, in their rooms, people you went to class with, who have the, you're in your same apartment complex, they're not special, they're not, they don't have lighting and big cameras in their faces all the time, they're not, there's no angels, there's no heroes, like we're just people, we're all just people, and we have choices to make and we have challenges to face. Solve your problems. Solve the problems throughout your day and share that knowledge, share that information with other people. Help them to solve their problems. We've got to stop looking outward. We got to stop looking at, you know, Washington, D.C. for solutions to things. They have no idea what's going on. Listen to them on Twitter. They're all idiots. They're idiots like the rest of us. They're no different from your next door neighbor. They're just in charge of stuff because we're using the system that gives them power. Stop it. Let's, and I know it's not, that's not, there's way more easier said than done. And I don't mean to, you know, I hope this doesn't come off as patronizing. It's not as if I'm completely exited from that system. I'm not contributing to it in numerous different ways, unfortunately. But I just think that's the perspective. Like, I think that's how we should look at it and do the one little thing that we can to get out from underneath it, to protect ourselves from it. It's why we need to hold our own keys and not leave our Bitcoin on exchanges. It's why we need to know how to use a public-private key pair and, you know, have our seed backed up on metal or, you know, on a piece of paper and put in a safe somewhere. It's why people install graphene on their phones. It's why people use Nostr. It's why we use Keet. It's why you build the Lightning Network to begin with. It's why you build a version that's non-custodial and has a Lightning service provider that automatically manages your liquidity so that there's no barrier to entry and you're still actually in charge. You're still sovereign. And you can get around the regulatory problems because you're not a financial service that takes custody. It's a whole lot easier to do the opposite. It's a whole lot easier to cut corners. It's a whole lot easier to just make a centralized payment network. Lightning was freaking difficult. It's not, and it's not even done. It's so far from done. There's still there's an infinite number of things to build. But all of it matters. All of it matters, man. Especially in this world with the technology and the speed with which information and ideas can move. Ideas are everything. They are the foundation for all of our purpose, for the reasons we, the stories we tell to, as to why we do a thing, and It's the source of all of the value that money has. It is entirely the product of the human mind. And in the digital era, when the human mind is, everything on the internet is just the human mind. It's the collective human consciousness put in this insane web of things, detailing out all the psychotic, weird, exciting, hopeful pieces of the human spirit and the human psyche, all of our stupid ideas, all of our great ideas, and watch them just smash up against each other and move and change and evolve every single second of every single day. In that era, the human mind is orders of magnitude more powerful than it has ever been. Even the smallest thing that we do to help push Bitcoin forward makes the race go makes us faster in the race. It puts us yet another, one more meme ahead, one more orange-pilled family member ahead of the game, one more interesting video that sparks an idea in someone that they never would have thought and gets them to look at something they thought they knew completely differently. You know, it could be the most important thing you do for someone else without even knowing it. I will go back to Isaiah's job here, and I will link to it again. It is likely that the most important people we influence, we will never know we did. We will never see them. We will never meet them. We will never hear from them. But they will move the needle. They will be the remnant. They will be quiet. They will just hear your message or hear about that one tool or that one thing, and they will take it away with them. And maybe they don't touch it, or it just pops back up randomly 6 months later. And maybe they even forgot where they heard it. They don't know where it came from. They think they came up with it. But we very likely will never know whether or not we did anything. But it is still our obligation to tell the truth as well as we possibly can, to explain it as well as we possibly can, and to help those people that can be helped. But when the world starts changing, it changes really, really fast. Suddenly you're on a time clock. And I think we have the privilege, the advantage of seeing the change happening. Most people don't. Most people see it in hindsight and they're like, holy crap, a lot of things happened. But I think it's more than anybody else, it is Bitcoiners who realize the fourth turning is here. And when that recognition is made, that is the time to realize we can't be spectators. That we have to do something, that we have to push something forward. So stack sats, be humble, save in Bitcoin, work your fiat job, your Bitcoin job, your life, solve your problems, protect your family, protect your systems. Understand and think about where your failures are and the quickest and shortest means that you can take to have a backup plan, to have another alternative. It's not that hard to go out to a farmer's market and talk to someone who makes food, like who grows food. Find a farmer that, you know, sells beef or something, and just have it in your back pocket. Just have it so that you can go to them and start buying from them. Make a relationship. Shake your, just the Texas Beef Initiative or whatever, right? Just shake their hand. Meet them. Just like us running a node to defend ourselves, if we all do it collectively, we defend our economy. If everyone defends themselves from cheating and from corruption and from invalid data on the Bitcoin system or on the Bitcoin network, then we defend everything that is Bitcoin from it. My node doesn't defend you, but if my node defends me and your node defends you, and we are the network, we are invincible. All we have to do is defend ourselves. We need to get our own lives in order, get our own buffers in order, focus locally. It's the definition of a grassroots movement. And this is a perfect example of a grassroots technology and a grassroots network and a grassroots ideological movement that is happening. Start from solving your problems and work outward. And I think Corey is right. I think we can avoid the war. And I think it is up to us. So, anyway, that was a really long rant. This was a great article. I had been sitting on this for a while, and when I was trying to come up with Read 700, I was like, this could be a good one. Because this one always gets me charged when I think about it. Because the world is changing really, really fast. And I think we are in a unique position to understand why and how. Not that we can predict the future, not that we really understand like all of the insane amounts of moving pieces and everything. I think we have a broad, dumb, like, you know, crayon drawn map of what is happening, but it's enough to orient. It's enough to be like, okay, this is the way I need to make decisions. This is how I need to think about things. And if we adopt that fully, the perspective, I think we will push in the right direction. We will build in the right direction. And we will make communities and connections and find people moving in the right direction. And that it will ultimately be what makes all the difference. That we will be able to protect ourselves and ultimately protect everyone from this. Or at least as many people as we possibly can. Obviously, there's already a whole lot of victims of the conflict and the shift happening in the world, and there's no way to avoid more, but we can do the best we can, right? So anyway, thank you guys. Love you guys. Love the show. I'm so stoked and overwhelmed by everything that's happening, but at the same time, I don't know. It's exciting. It's exciting, to say the least. With that, we will close this one out. A thank you to Swan Bitcoin, to CoinKite, and to the Fold Card for supporting this show and bringing this to you as many days of the week as I can possibly manage and stay productive. Don't forget to boost. Don't forget to suggest things that you want me to read. Again, I do this for you guys. I mean, part of it is just because I want to read about Bitcoin and I want to rant, but I want to do the things that I want to rant about and talk about and share and teach the things that you want to learn, right? What are your problems? What are the pieces that are missing, particularly with the basics? That's the whole point of going back to all of this, is because I do feel like I've done a bad job in this context, that I get way too deep in the weeds when there's very, very simple things that still just need to be explained again. So hopefully the basic series can be that. And feel free to send it to anyone that you think is ready to go down the rabbit hole and wants a perspective. That's what we do here at Bitcoin Audible. And I appreciate you staying subscribed. Thank you to the Audionauts, to everybody at the Ketoverse. What's up, guys? I'm going to go hang out on Keet for a little bit and talk with the people who are building some stuff. Catch you on Noster. Catch you on Fountain. Thank you so much. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. The brick walls are there for a reason. The brick walls are not there to keep us out. The brick walls are there to give us a chance to show how badly we want something. Because the brick walls are there to stop the people who don't want it badly enough. They're there to stop the other people. Randy Pausch, The Last Lecture.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.